Hi, this is Pastor Wilson with Renew Church OC. Thanks for joining our podcast. We're walking through the book of Luke, thinking about what it means to follow Jesus, to see the world the way he does, and to integrate his patterns into our life. I hope you enjoy the sermon today. I also wanted to point you to the description section where you can find the church's website. We would love for you to visit our church and consider investing in our ministry. There's two other links. One is a podcast that I do with a therapist at Renew Church, and we kick around issues like dating, mental health, and friendships. And lastly, there's a children's book series and a journal that I wrote with my wife and my mentor, and would love for you to look at those resources as well. Thank you so much for being a part of the Renew Church family, and I hope that you enjoy the sermon today. God bless. All right. Thanks, everyone, for being here this morning. And I'm really grateful for Kristen sharing a little bit. And also, we'll be bringing up Rika and Roy into the conversation as we talk about some of these topics. So I think about something that felt embarrassing for me. I was picking up the phone, and I remember shaking. I was about sixth grade, sitting on the living room floor, and calling my youth pastor, and I wanted to confess something that had been gnawing away at my spirit for months. And when he picked up, my voice was shaking, and I said, I did something like super wrong. And he said, what did you do? And I was like, I can't even tell you. Like, I don't even have the words. I think I'm going to hell. Like, would you help me? Like, would you just pray for me? And he's like, what happened, Wilson? I was like, worst thing possible. Did you kill someone? I was like, not yet. Did you take drugs? Did you get drunk? No. Did you steal something? I didn't steal anything. And then he asked, was it masturbation? I didn't know what the word meant, but it sounded gross. So I was like, I'm pretty sure that's what it was. And he prayed for me, and then we pretty much didn't talk about it for 20 years. As my sex addiction got worse, as I went to Sundays and small groups and fellowship, week after week, carrying this pile of concrete around, I didn't know how to put it at the feet of Jesus. I don't feel like I ever heard words spoken into me through the Bible that helped relieve my pain. And it just felt like I was utterly alone. Once in a while, we would have a winter retreat where there's an open mic. And usually, I was the first to share about my struggle. Other brothers would share. We would cry. And then another 364 days would go by. And then the places that we had open conversations was like all my friends who weren't Christian. You know, they talked very brashly and openly about it. You could go on Netflix and hear jokes about porn any day of the week. And then there was all the media that basically told me everything was good and okay. I got so desperate for prayer that I was watching TBN, and it had a prayer hotline number just scrolling through the bottom. And I picked up my phone as like a ninth grader asking some random woman on the other side to help me. I wonder why we come to church in small group. Like, what are we doing here if the thing that is impacting our spiritual life the most, the thing that we're struggling with and making breaking our relationship with God, our wife, and each other is the thing that we don't speak of? Is that what church and small group and hearing God's word supposed to be? I think about, what if the leopard hid the white spots on his chest when Jesus was walking by? What if the tax collector told Jesus, I'm just doing my job? Or the woman who had demons, what if she just put on a polite smile and told Jesus that everything was fine? It's in the hidden spaces of our life. It's in the darkness that sin festers, that addiction takes hold. It's in the things that we hide from the Lord that remain unforgiven and unloved and unhealed. So today we're gonna take a dive into sexual and love addiction.
sexual addiction, love addiction. Here are three main reasons. First, that I've covered this in my story, it's because it's often hidden and feels shameful. There's not a lot of spaces in the place we need most, at church and with our friends, that we're willing to speak about this. But the second reason is because it's pervasive. I'm gonna give you two definitions of sex addiction and love addiction for you to read through. But let me describe love addiction just a little bit. Some of the symptoms is being addicted to the rush of feeling in love. There's actually a name for this, it's called limerence. And then another symptom of love addiction is quickly and intensely attaching ourselves to a partner or feeling fully empty without a partner. In the same way that someone who is addicted to alcohol or drugs is trying to bury their emotions or escape or have that neurological high, that's what sex addiction does when it comes to pornography or going to strip clubs or sleeping around. And that's what love addiction does when it comes to feeling that high of falling in love or attaching recklessly. When we look at porn usage, there's a lot of different surveys out there. This is one that surveyed over 1,000 men and women who were in relationships. 98% of men surveyed said that they had watched porn in the last 6 months. And that's shocking even for me. Like I thought it was 90% maybe, 80% over the last week. For women, 73% over the last 6 months percent have viewed porn. 26% over the last week had viewed porn. And then when you add in another statistic from a separate survey, 36% will use erotic fiction as a way of love or sexual addiction. And maybe the most sobering thing is that the first exposure to porn on average is 11 years old. So if you consider the same number of people who are viewing porn for the first time at 13 would be the same number as someone viewing porn at 9 in how the statistical spread works. 22% of children were first introduced to porn between the age of 6 and 10. And when you ask for these statistics, many people in research will say it's probably underreported because it's very difficult to gather accurate stats from that age group, and they also feel a lot of shame for reporting. And I just want to tell you that it's never too early to have age-appropriate conversations with your children. If your kids are in youth group and you haven't had a conversation, trust me, you're probably not the first one to talk to them. But you might be the first one to help guide their sexuality in a way that's God-glorifying and in a way that helps them set boundaries. I think about my first exposure to pornography before the internet, before streaming online platforms. I was first exposed in first grade. This is 30 years ago. One of my friends who was maybe 3 or 4 years older found a stash of Playboy magazines in the garage, and he was showing me. And I wasn't even sure what I was looking at. Around 9 or 10 years old, I was sleeping at a relative's house, and they were unaware of a channel they had that had explicit erotic videos. And I didn't know what it was, but I was drawn to it. And as I slept in the living room every night, I would flip to that channel. Before the internet, before a library of videos on your kid's phone and iPads and laptops, I was exposed at that age. So I want to plead with you as parents to open the conversation and do it consistently. Lastly, there's high spiritual impact as a third reason for why we're talking about this. I'm going to go through this verse briefly, even though it's not our main passage. How do you know that he who unites himself with a prostitute is one with her in body? For it is said the two will become one flesh. But whoever is united with the Lord is one with him in spirit. Flee from sexual immorality. This concept of two becoming one flesh is speaking about not just physical insertion between a man and a woman, but this nuclear fusion between two whole persons coming together. The word flesh is soma. It's speaking about the entirety of the person, their mind, their body, their soul, their emotions. The way that God designed sex is to bring two people together in a permanent way. And that's a totally different concept of it. When we think about sex in society, it's just adult play, or it's just sex. It's almost meaningless. Us Christians are saying we need to fight for sexual integrity and ethics. We need to fight for against sex addiction, not because we have a low, shameful view of sex, but because we have the highest view of sex. That the function of sex is to bring two people together in every way. And that nuclear fusion can only be contained in the context of marriage. That in marriage, it's a beautiful thing for what Tim Keller says is a radical self-donation of one person's soul to another. The marking of another person's soul with your own, so that even when me and Nina are apart, we're together. Even when she's upstairs and I'm down here, there's a part of her that resides in me through the function of sex. And I get to hear her voice in my head, like, hey, pick up that piece of trash, or close the gate, or don't say that. Right? She's a part of me, and I'm a part of her. And that is beautiful and profound in the context of us giving our future families and finances to become one. But there's something tragic about that. When you feel deeply connected, and then you step away from the relationship because it was just a first date. It was just a hookup. We were just engaged. We're not going to get married anymore. The second thing I want to point out is the two ways in which Paul uses the word unite. He says that this word unite, the same Greek word and used both in 16 and 17, is a way in which he's describing the Spirit of God living in us. That when we become Christian, the Lord lives inside of us. There's nothing more intimate than that. That also respects our autonomy, our agency, but is intensely intimate, right? Ernest and I, we were best men for each other. But Ernest, would you want me to live inside of you? You don't even want me to live in your house for a few days. That's crazy, right? But that's what God's saying, that the Spirit of God lives inside of us. That's the kind of unity he's speaking of. And then he takes that same word and applies it to sex. He's saying that when you unite yourself with a prostitute, which is a larger category for us than them, at that time, the only way you would have sex outside of marriage is because you paid for it. And so when you open up that category as sex outside of marriage with our boyfriend or girlfriend or hookup, he's saying that when you do that with another person, they get to live inside of you the way the Spirit does. That is the function of sex. And the primary reason for why God is asking us to abstain from sex outside marriage is not to save ourselves for our husband or wife. It's because, he's saying, it's because you are God's temple. I live inside of you. So be holy. Don't bring someone else into the space that is meant for you and me and your wife or husband. So we're talking about sexual addiction and love addiction because it's often shameful and hidden, because it's pervasive, and because there's high spiritual and relational impact. Let me move to our main text today. No one lights a lamp and puts it in a place where it will be hidden, or under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand so that those who come in may see the light. Your eye is a lamp of your body. When your eyes are healthy, your whole body is full of light. But when they are unhealthy, your whole body is full of darkness. See to it then that the light within you is not darkness. Therefore, if your whole body is full of light and no part of it is dark, it will be just as full of light as when a lamp shines its light on you. We're going to break this into three quick points, and then we'll fill those points with application when it comes to love addiction, sex addiction. The first analogy of lamp is speaking about the word of God and Christ. That Christ, as he's speaking the word, is meant to be placed in a high space, infecting the entirety of our lives with his truth, and shining on the whole world. But in verse 34, the author, Jesus, pivots from the word of God and himself being a lamp to our eyes being a lamp. And this is what are we fixated on and what are we letting in? And what he's saying is that what we focus on is what we become. If we focus on Jesus and his word, we become like him. And verse 36 is such a phenomenal promise that we can be so full of light by being fixated on Christ that we become like the light we're looking at. But in the same way, our eyes can be filled with darkness. We could be fixated on something evil. And that evil thing can fill our mind, our soul, our emotions, and our body. It can be so evil that in verse 35, the darkness becomes light to us. We think that the evil we're fixated on is actually good. Maybe a clear example of this are all of the different groups out there that love, different categories. And one of the documentaries I was watching, there's a group of people who love the Columbine shooters and have put their posters on their wall. And they watch that film over and over again. And I know it's a horrific idea, but they have become light. That darkness has become light to this group of people. But that applies to us as well, for those who are struggling with sexual addiction. All right, verse 34. Again, when we think about what it looks like to have our eyes filled with darkness, I'm going to talk about it on the sexual addiction side. I remember when it was really difficult to watch porn. Like, the internet was slow, it was dial-up, you know, maybe you have a few R-rated movies laying around and you just hit that 30 seconds. But if you really want explicit material, you had to walk into a video store, not Blockbusters. There's like this curtain in the back. You're going through the curtain, hope you don't see anyone you know, right? There's about 500 videos. You pick one out, you pick out a curtain again, and then I step to the cashier and I'm trying not to make eye contact with him. And I'm like, I wish COVID happened earlier so I could do the mask, you know, hoodie. I mean, think about all the barriers that I had to break in order to get porn at that phase of my life. It wasn't anonymous. There was no incognito mode. I had to use gas. I had to look at people. I had to fear for my reputation. That's not true anymore. And as porn became more accessible, I think about college, I think about post-college where all the websites started developing and it basically looks like YouTube. It's extremely easy for all of us to just walk around with millions of videos on our phone. And while this is happening, I felt my whole person be filled with darkness. I think about how I viewed women as objects. And maybe I didn't treat them that way or speak that way, but in the recesses of my mind, there were so many thoughts in the middle of conversations that would have, you know, been really just terrible to that person. I think about the risky and unsatiable appetite that I had for my behavior, that it started escalating where it became uncontrollable. Especially in my 20s, there was a time where the office I shared with all the other church employees in the English ministry was empty, and I was willing to use my laptop for that behavior in that space. That's the kind of spiraling my addiction took. That at a certain point, when things weren't available, when I started locking some of the stuff down, I would go and like a drug addict, look down every alley in order to find satiation for my desires. And lastly, I think about what happens when the light becomes darkness. When we take a hard look at the material that we're allowing into our souls. When we step back and see what it actually is, it doesn't take long to go down the trails of pornography to know that rape culture is elevated. Just like the Columbine shooters are hung on the wall of that young men cult, we've hung some of the most evil parts of society as our gods and idols as well. I sat at a conference with a woman sharing about human trafficking. And let me scan for any kids in this room, and hopefully they left by now. And she shared about rescuing different women from people who had been trafficking them. And one of the women, because of Stockholm Syndrome, went back to her abuser. And at that point, she was killed, she was lit on fire, and she was thrown out on the streets of LA as a hardcore message to all the women in Los Angeles, the city, the outskirts that we reside in, that if you run away, this is what happens to you. I sat in that chair and I looked at her and I said, help me bridge the college student who's watching porn, not me, I'm a pastor, attending this pastor conference, and this woman who's laid out on the street. And she locked eyes with me and she wouldn't let go. And she said, the same women that are driven to the street corners and to the strip clubs are the same women that you're viewing on your laptop. And I remember that just cutting me to the core. You know, there's things that we normalize in every addiction that are evil. And I wonder if today we're willing to face some of the things that we've participated in, some of the darkness that have become light or gray in our lives. I'd invite Rika up to share about love addiction, and then Roy and I will close off our time together.
Good morning, everyone. Sorry, I'm feeling like emotional. I just want to say it's such a big deal that a pastor would speak on this today. So I just really want to capitalize on that. And I just feel so much respect for you, Pastor Wilson. Sorry. I'm really passionate about this subject. And I really want to just tell each of you here, sisters and brothers at Renew, it's such a privilege that you guys are here today and that you guys get to be part of this discussion, because it's so, so crucial and critical that we hear about this and that the church needs to talk about this more. I've never stepped into a church like this, so it is such a treasure. Just want to share that. Whew, okay, so the first question, about what does it look like to allow explicit material into eyes that fuel love addiction. It could be seen when someone is obsessively on Instagram or TikTok or social media. It could be someone who's overly texting someone that they're fantasizing about or wanting attention from. Love addicts can, so this isn't in a romantic relationship, but it could be in like, you know, between friends or coworker or family members, partner, boss, even ex-partners, ex-boyfriends, ex-girlfriends. A love addict can consume a lot of romantic shows or movies and constantly ruminate and fantasize over the hero of the show. It could be someone going on dating apps, scrolling through, you know, dating potential partners and going from relationship to relationship, and ending up, you know, interacting with someone who's emotionally unavailable, and then that leads to a lot of empty hookups and so forth. And number two, how does that fill our whole person with darkness? There's a quick slide of a picture, I don't know if that's on your end, of a person wearing a black hoodie picture. Oh, right there, okay. So I chose this picture just that when there's darkness, it really like isolates you from community. You are out of touch with reality, and you, because of that control, right? That fantasy and obsession, those compulsive behaviors are controlling you. It hurts you, your relationship with God, with spouse, kids, friends, that you just start withdrawing. And you neglect responsibilities due to this obsession taking over. You don't realize that what you're seeking after is hurting you and destroying you. When you give your heart, your being, your mind into something that's not of God's will, it ends up you feeling so just depressed, lifeless, lonely, and just very unaware and dysfunctional. There's a verse from 1 Peter 5:8 that says, "Be alert and sober-minded. The enemy prowls around looking to devour," right? And John 10:10 says, "The thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy." And that's what the enemy wants. He wants to take all of God's goodness out of you. He wants to destroy that joy in you. Anything that's the light of Christ, the enemy's going to attack you and want to isolate you and make you in despair, just like this picture. Number three, what does the addiction lead to? It leads to powerlessness, despair, and imprisonment. How can it become celebrated and good? We hear from culture, right? Do what makes you happy. If it feels good, don't stop. Just do it. You could start rationalizing yourself, saying, you know, I could be doing worse things, or at least I'm not as bad as him or her. There's a lot of excuses. And maybe also a sense of false, like, woman empowerment. Like, I'm in control of my decisions. I deserve this because I'm a good person, or I got a raise, or X, Y, and Z. There's a lot of excuses you can make. And so the next picture I want to share is a broken cistern. Jeremiah 2:13 says, "My people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, they have abandoned me, the fountain of living water, and dug out their own cisterns that hold no water." So there's kind of like us, you know, we think that something's good for us, right? Because it feels good, so don't stop. But what's happening is that there's cracks. It's not holding any water. And then what does the journey towards the light look like? Pastor Wilson earlier talked about, you know, accountability group, you know, having a place where you're able to confess and be real and transparent. I think especially for women and men too, we are looking for a space where we feel seen, where we feel accepted, understood, right? And someone who doesn't judge us. We need that you know, band of sisters and brothers that pray for us, ask us those hard questions. Also therapy, if you're, you know, suffering from maybe trauma from childhood or any pain that's holding you back from experiencing breakthrough, please seek a Christian mental therapist. And I'm not saying, you know, replace that with time with Jesus, because ultimately Jesus is the counselor. He's the ultimate healer. But yes, it is one of the greatest tools to see and talk with someone that's objective. I'm a big advocate of spiritual direction. I personally see a spiritual director once a month, and it's just so good to carve out that time of silence and solitude, having, you know, that practice of being with the Lord. That's kind of like mindfulness, right? Like therapists who are here practicing that stillness, being in the present mode, being aware of your thoughts and feelings, presenting those things to God, allowing God to speak to you through his word, you know, your identity in Christ. If we don't spend time with God's word, we're just going to listen to all the lies and the deception that's everywhere on social media. So seeking Jesus, his word, pursuing treasure, that time with him, that is so, so important, and you have to fight for that time. It's not going to come naturally. And
So anyways, this picture of people leaping in the air, again, just symbolic of how this addiction, whatever, sexual addiction, love addiction, we can't overcome it and fight it on our own. You cannot do it by yourself. You need people, again, that's committed to praying for you, keeping you accountable. The last picture here of a father, you know, delighting in his daughter. I love this picture so much. With sex addiction, there's a list of words that are interchangeable. So sex addiction can also mean intimacy disorder or attachment disorder. And a lot of times we fall into addiction because in our childhood, our needs were not met. A lot of us grew up with very broken parents, right? It's not their fault. Maybe that's just what they learned from their own family. But I really wanted to share this picture because, again, in our times of quietness with the Lord, when you're listening to worship music or meditating or, you know, going outside for a walk, please keep this picture in your mind that we need to ask Jesus to reparent us. He's the one that's going to father us and mother us and, the ways that our own parents couldn't fulfill that need, right? Jesus is there. He wants the best for each of us. Psalm 37 says, delight in me and I will give you the desires of your heart. Jeremiah 29 talks about, if you seek me with all your heart, you will find me. John 10 says, he is the good shepherd. Not just for me, to all of us. This is a promise for every one of you, that he came that we all may have life and have it abundantly. And so I just wanted to encourage all of you with these truths today. Thank you.
Roy's going to share as well about accountability groups in the context of sex addiction. And we're pivoting in this conversation towards what are the ways that we could pull our eyes off of darkness and put it on light, on the Lord. Thank you, Rika, again.
Test. All right. I remember when I was a freshman in college, and I had already been, maybe 6 years already into my own porn and sexual addiction. And very similar to what Wilson was sharing, that, you know, not growing up with the internet, this is just about like magazines and VCR, VHS tapes, JCPenney magazines, you know, things like that. I remember being at a Christian fellowship on campus, and on one of the Wednesday nights, there was this man, well, I considered him a man. He was a senior, I was a freshman, and he had red hair, and in the middle of this discussion group, he raises his hand and asks the pastor, what should I do about my masturbation problem? And I thought I was going to have a heart attack. I grew up in a Korean church, and they just say things like, you know, don't listen to Beastie Boys, you know, don't listen to, you know, bank gangster rap, and burn your tapes, right? And for this guy to brazenly just say, what should I do about my masturbation problem? I'm 50 years old right now. I'm still remembering stuff like that. Like, it's so shocking to hear someone say that when I was growing up, but it left an imprint on me and it made me realize there's a whole nother world of living that I have no familiarity with until I realized that I had a sexual addiction and I had people that I could talk about that with. the whole concept of carrying secrets and keeping it to yourself and trying to think that we can overcome something as powerful as sexual addiction by ourselves is just false. We can't do it. I wish that there was a way that we could just ask God as a good boy or as a good girl to say, please take this away, and that he would do it. But the stories of that happening are so few and far between that I think it doesn't point to the ineffectiveness of people's prayers. I think it points more towards the fact that this is how God operates. He operates through not a snapping of the finger, but by actually having people confess and strategize and be authentic and to humble themselves and to do the painstaking work of authentic living day in and day out. And so one of the reasons why I created this video group thing is because I had heard a lot of people saying to me that their accountability groups weren't working. And I asked them, why do you think it wasn't working? I said, well, what we basically do is we meet together maybe weekly or every other week, and we just say, yeah, I messed up again. And then they would pray, and they'd feel like, okay, maybe God will work this week. And then you meet again the next week, and it's kind of the same thing. Yeah, I messed up again. So, okay, well, it's a good start, right? It's definitely a great start to be able to say, yeah, I messed up, and maybe kind of talking through that. But there probably needs to be something more strategic that actually applies some of the best research out there about what actually works in conjunction with our devotion to the Lord, our devotion to kingdom living. So the group video that I devised is my attempt at trying to instill strategy and structure. Like, when we gather together, what should we talk about? What are we saying besides, hey, I messed up again? What are we actually trying to do in the middle of the week to make it a better attempt than the previous week? And how do you build off of success? What do you do when there is failure? Some people have told me that they didn't realize that there was actually things that they can do. I said, definitely there are things that you can do. And it's not a cure-all video, but it's an attempt to get 90 days under your belt. And those 90 days are significant because just the way that God designed the brain to work is for brains to be able to heal and to create new pathways, to undo certain habits and to create new habits. Like, that stuff takes time. And so it's a video series that's hopefully full of a lot of grace, but also a lot of encouragement to be accountable in ways that maybe we haven't thought of before. And I just want to say that as addicts will be honest with themselves, we normalize certain things such as secrecy. When you go through the behavior and you're secretive about it, you think of life in a certain way. Like, everything that I do is shameful and it can never get better. And maybe even getting to the point of thinking that what you're doing is becoming more and more normal. But when you get into the company of other people who realize with you, like, this is a real problem, and we can speak into it and saying, this shouldn't be normal. This should, living while viewing men and women not as objects for your own personal desire, but as people to honor and respect, that should be normal. In God's economy, and we're going to help each other kind of practice that language of speaking about other people and about ourselves with a lot of dignity. So that matters, you know, to be intentional in meeting with people and having those kind of conversations that really matters in the changing of our hearts and our spiritual formation. So whether you use this video series or whether you use a lot of good stuff out there, I encourage you to be part of a group just because just experience tells us that trying to do this by yourselves is very unfruitful and it doesn't have lasting impact. And we just get down on ourselves because we realize we're just failing all the time. Was there another question you want me to ask? Okay. All
right. Thank you so much, Roy. We are super blessed to have Roy and Rika as a part of our community, who love you guys and who has opened up their hands so generously with their gifts, as many of you have in different areas. I'm just going to touch on these four different things as I think about sobriety. Roy talked about sobriety groups. And at the end of the day, if you could have done it alone, you would have done it already, you know? So us coming into groups is kind of the end game for this sermon. We're going to send out a weekly email, and you'll be able to use the Google form to sign up for a love addiction or a sex addiction group. And then you'll be put into a group, and if you desire, and given a self-led guide. For sex addiction, Roy has a video series that help make the group robust and effective. And then there's other worksheets you can do after that series. And then Rika's going to write a self-led guide for love addiction as well. And so if that's something you're struggling with, we want you to come together in those two ways. And some of the reasons why that's super important, as Roy pointed out, is that you know, this journey into sobriety is about 3 to 5 years long. So good job to me praying that 10-minute prayer of God, please help me to stop, or singing that 5-minute really emotive song crying about I'm sorry. But what about the other 2 years and 364 days? How do we face our addiction during all the other moments where we have to be intentional and take step forward in order to have sobriety? I think another reason is because in our groups, we're learning to create boundaries. We're learning to, like from my phone, I don't have an internet browser, I can't download apps, and I have the age restriction on it. And so I could basically trade it in for like a dumb phone and save some money. And then all the devices in my home are locked up. And so there's all these restraints that I'm putting on myself. But then in those boundaries, I have amazing freedom to be able to lay in bed with my phone and I don't have to say no 100 times to pornography. I could be at home for half the day without my wife and kids and I feel safe to build out space to engage in the word and to pull my gaze away from darkness and have the space to look at the Lord. You just don't have the willpower to go hours and days and weeks saying no to your addiction. You don't have that willpower when your addiction comes at you after failure or rejection. It's the boundaries that we've learned to set up in our sobriety group that makes space not just for sobriety but for the Lord. Lastly, when we're facing our addiction, we're kind of facing everything. And the reason for that is because addiction fills so many buckets in our life. Like when I'm bored, I went to porn for excitement. When I felt injured emotionally or spiritually, I went to porn to numb me and give me anesthesia in my pain. When I feel rejected or like a failure, porn made me feel successful and accepted. I could pretty much reach into all the pockets of my life and say there was a way in which pornography helped soothe that part of my soul. And so it's not just about letting go of an addiction. That's where the strongman analogy comes in from Kevin's sermon last week. If God just pulled that addiction out of our life, think about all the strings that are attached to that. It's so easy to just pull another addiction in to replace it. It's about attaching each of those strings and reattaching it to the Lord and saying, Lord, I need you to give me value and identity. I need you to help me grow my capacity to hold emotions. I need you to help me have a radical dedication to reality because that's where you reside and that's what you want me to face with you. Facing our addiction means facing everything. And so that's why the Lord wants to work with us in community in order to grow the 100 things in our life that's required for us to let go of this one thing and hold on to him instead. In the strong man illustration, Jesus is saying, if I just get rid of the demon, or let's say the addiction, and you get that restart, but you haven't grown, you haven't taken the years to grow your character or your capacity, something else will take its place. So it's not about sobriety, it's about how do we allow Jesus and his light to invade and take the place of all these other things. Thanks so much for joining us today. We're really grateful that you'd spend time listening to the sermon series. And we also wanted to point you to a few other resources. My wife and I wrote a children's book collection helping kids bridge their faith with God's calling in their life as a businessman, as a doctor or nurse, and as a creative. Secondly, we wrote an adulting journal, which helps young adults think through this transition into adulthood, whether it's transitions in friendship, family, faith, or calling. And lastly, I want to point to a podcast that myself and another church member, Roy Kim, who's a therapist, co-host together. It's called The Same Boat. We talk about relationships. We just finished a series on dating. We think back to an English ministry church, and we just tackle all kinds of topics that are relevant to our life. I hope that those resources enrich your life as well. And lastly, if you're looking to partner with us, on our website, we have a give section. You could give to our general fund and continue to serve our church through through partnering with us financially. But if you scroll down, we have quite a few local missionaries that have called Renew Home. If you read their bio, there's also a section to give to each one of our local missionaries. We hope that all of them would be fully funded going into this year. God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us. And hope to have you join us again.